Good morning.
There's nothing to get your heart pumping like a four-verse song that you think is three verses. It's the end of verse three. You are ready to get up there and go, and then you see there's one more. It's good to be here. We're three deep in the lineup today. David is preaching in Sparks. Scott is out of town. So we get third stringer today. I will encourage you, take your Bibles out. Regardless of who's preaching, we're all looking at the same book here, and that's the Bible. So go ahead and take that out today, and I encourage you, if you do have pencils, pen, paper, something to write with, or go along in your mind with me. I'm going to start out by asking a question this morning, and this is a question that I actually would not entertain if I was in the seats out there. If I were to get this question to myself, I would pretty much disregard it, because this actually just isn't something that appeals to me, but I'm actually hoping that we can connect here this morning. Have you ever wanted a superpower? And then, more importantly, if you did, which one would you choose? So I never really got tied up into the superhero superpower thing. Mom might tell you differently. I actually don't know her thoughts on this, but I don't remember getting really involved in that as a kid. But it seems to be all the rage. People want superpowers. They want to engage in these movies and video games and action figures that have to do with superpowers. So, if you had one, what would you choose? Now that you've taken a lot of time to discuss this theological question, why do you want it? Why do you want that particular superpower? Do you want flight? Do you want super stretch? Do you want strength? Maybe invisibility. Maybe if you're a parent, you want the power of narcolepsy to be able to just tell your kid, go to sleep. And there they go. But what superpower would you want and why? For me personally, I'd want, probably flight, or to be able to stretch really far, because as someone who's 5'4", lots of things are out of my reach. So this would give me the ability to use the upper cabinets in my kitchen. But as funny as that is, that actually represents something. That represents that we live in a world with obstacles. I think this is the draw of superpowers themselves. And this whole, fad, but Alicia's brother, Nick, he talks about them, and their kids are all into them. It's probably not a fad, but we look at the obstacles in our lives, and we look at these struggles, and we want something to overcome them. We want some big power, something that's going to get us through, because we realize that they're big struggles, they're big obstacles. So in these movies and in these comic books, you'll see villains and disasters and natural tornadoes and just bad situations. And then you have this superhero who has the power to bring them through that. And kind of jumping back to reality then, we have obstacles in our lives. And so we might vicariously live through these comic books to give ourselves hope, or through these movies. But when we come back to reality, we find out that there are obstacles in our lives every day that we have to overcome. So naturally, my mind goes to, do we have superpowers as Christians? Because I have these obstacles, and I want to be able to overcome them. I don't want to be crushed every time an obstacle comes in my path. I want to actually overcome that obstacle. So for those of you that are in the First Peter class, some of this is going to be review here at the beginning, but I encourage you to think about what we've studied in that class. And then for those of you who aren't in that class, this is coming up to speed with what we're going over in the auditorium. So with your Bibles open now, let's look at 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 to 5. We're actually going to read verses 1 to 8 to get a little context, but 3 to 5 is going to be our main text for this morning. Peter starts out his letter and says, "Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia and Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, in the sanctification of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ and for sprinkling with his blood. May grace and peace be multiplied to you. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, that is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. So Peter starts out writing this book to a group that he calls exiles, to people who just don't belong. These are Jews, these are Gentiles, but they're people that they've lost their place. Now we actually might not identify with that because we do have a place. We're citizens of the United States. We have a citizenship. We have a place. These people, if they were Jews, had actually lost their citizenship because they've been dispersed. They're not in the promised land. And they'd also taken the name of Christ. They've left the law and they've taken on Christ. And so at that point, they're naturally in a place in which obstacles are in their lives. And Peter's writing this book to address how do you overcome these obstacles. And that's why he starts out verses 3 to 5, in which he talks about this living hope. So I want to actually look at 1 Peter as a whole in the problems that these people were facing, the actual situations that they found themselves in which they didn't have power to overcome, or they might have felt crushed. And as we look at these are first century problems that we're talking about here. But see if you can't find one that connects with you, an obstacle or a problem that Peter addresses that corresponds with something in your life that you might struggle with. So he looks in chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. He talks about people who reject Jesus, or who reject their belief. He starts here, this has got a real big Jewish influence in my mind, in which people who had something that pointed towards the Messiah, constantly pointed towards the Savior, and then you've got a group of Jews who say, yes, Jesus is that Messiah, and they go for it, and they live for it. Then you have everyone else who's stuck back here rejecting Jesus, say, no, he's not it. And so in the rejection of their belief, you now have a struggle. And this struggle is what leads to the exiles of the Jews, right? When they take and they struggle against each other, they're now removed from the Jewish community, and they're stuck out into the world. It was actually something we lived in Tennessee. It was a big problem for Amish people. When they rejected the Amish faith, they got thrown out into the world, which was a huge obstacle. When you don't live like they call them the Englishmen. If you don't live like an Englishman, Social Security, bank accounts, cars, all the modern things of life become obstacles. When these people as Jews came out of Judaism and into a Gentile world, they were faced with obstacles. He brings up chapter 2, verse 13, the government and how they are to act with the government. Government in itself just, I think, causes a problem for most people when we say religion and government, Christianity and government. There's tension there. And Peter says, hey, this is something you're going to struggle with, and I've got an answer for you. Slaves and masters, what we talked about this morning, and I know Randy really tried to get us to make a connection there with this, right? Bosses and employers, masters and slaves, people that have authority over you and the power to do something that affects your life. And these people were being abused and mistreated, even though they weren't doing anything wrong. Relationships in general, chapter 3, verses 1 to 7, spouses that don't believe, conduct that's not appropriate for a man and a woman, and the strife that comes between that. And then 3:13 talks about physical persecution, just kind of the blanket statement of you're doing the right thing and then someone's going to hurt you, whether that be verbally, whether that be physically. So Peter writes this book to address these problems. And then he kind of lays more of a blanket statement in verse 6 of chapter 1. And whatever various trials you might find, whatever various struggles you find in your life. And so I want to use this as our launching point this morning. That Peter says that this living hope is the power to overcome obstacles for people in the first century. So what power does your hope give you? And this is a question, this is a challenge I want to answer this morning. Which means we're going to take a look at hope. We're going to see actually what hope is, how we get power out of hope, and then what do we actually do with the power that our hope gives us? Or is hope really just this intangible concept that we throw around to make us feel better about ourselves? So, what is hope? What's great is you all are asking these questions in your mind. I know it, and they just happen to go with my slides. So, what is hope? Hope itself is, it's not tangible. It's not something that you can grab onto. When Peter says you've been caused, God and his mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope, you can't go to Walmart on aisle 13 and go pick out hope off of that. It's not something we can grab with our hands. And so for me, I look at how do I use that word hope? because I've been thinking about this lesson for a while. I've been trying to look at my life. Just when does the word hope come out of my mouth? And it's normally for pretty petty things. I think it actually came out in class that I hope for milkshakes. I'm on Wednesday nights. I hope for maybe an advancement at work or at my house or a better car, a better trip. I hope the best in things. And so when I say this, I'm using the word generally, and this is probably as deep as my grammatical knowledge is going to go, as a verb. I verb hope. I action hope. I have this hope, this feeling inside of me. And so it's a wishful thinking, maybe the positive vibes, some intent that I have. And this is not how Peter uses the word here in verses 3, but this is our most common way that we use this hope, and I actually think Peter's trying to transition us to that, to the action of hope. But we look at this and we see that when I hope something, I have a desire for it. I want it. We sang in our songs this morning, 682, right, a new song, I want to hear, I want to see, I want to. Those words, I want to, represent a desire, and it's a desire in the future. Something about hope is that hope is not now. Hope is not something that I don't hope in this moment right now. I hope in something in the future. And so with that, as beings of a linear timeline, there's a little bit of uncertainty in our lives when it comes to hope. That's kind of how we use the word most of the time, is I hope this. I'm not quite certain about it, but I have a desire for it. Romans 8:24, if we want to flip over there, Paul writes, and he says, hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes in what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. The biblical concept of hope, when the Bible talks about it, it's not talking about something that we have here. The object, the desire, is not something the thing that is desired, is not the thing that we have here. It is something out in the future. The other thing we can look at this is that dread might be the negative version of hope. I hope for something or I dread something. We have these two concepts that both deal with the future, one in the positive, one in the negative. And they both share something. They share a desire or the lack of desire and then the expectation that is going to happen. So when Peter uses this word, I found this comical. I like to go type the word in Google, find out what it says. And under the noun section, it says archaic. Old. And I almost read that as, this is the irrelevant little piece of text that we're going to stick there for you, but no one uses it this way. And it says, a feeling of trust. I kind of like that. So maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm archaic. But hope, when it's a noun, is this thing, this feeling of trust in something. So when we look at Hebrews 11:1, it tells us that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the substance of the conviction of things not seen. So this feeling of trust, hope is based on trust. Hope is based on our faith. The Bible tells us so. And so when we look at that, we see that this component now, this expectation component, is really our faith, that our hope is dependent on the faith that we have. And then the desire for something. And so you pair those two together. So Peter's talking about now, when he talks about this living hope, this noun hope, this thing, he's talking about what those two things do together inside of you, what they make up, and then what that produces. And I like to put things in equations. So when I look at this, I want to actually phrase this as the power of hope. Because I think we can look at desire and expectation, or desire and confidence, or confidence expectation. Those are typical words that you might use when you talk about hope. But putting it into something that I can use, I can use an equation. I can put that together and I can outcome with something. So for maybe the more math nerds in here, the little thing that looks like a little, almost like a fish, is actually the symbol for directional or directly proportional to. So hope is desire and expectation. We have something we want, and there's a level of expectation with those. As the desire goes up and as the expectation goes up, the power of hope goes up with it. So So simply put, if I really want something and I expect that I'm going to get that, there's going to be some action. There's going to be some way that I live because of that hope. You might have the desire for something, but you have no expectation, and so you really have no hope, or vice versa. You might not desire it, and you expect that it's going to happen, and so we might call that dread. And so this actually happened with me going to the auto parts store. I have the desire to go get a part at the auto parts store, but I have zero expectation that I'm actually going to get what I need. Because four times in there, I still don't really have a running truck. So we look at those things, but we use this every day in our life. We have things that we want, and we expect it, and so we live a certain way. So that's great, but why do I need it? So we have hope. Hope's got some power in it. It causes me to live a certain way. But why do I need hope? The commonly accepted reason for hope, and we saw it in some of our songs this morning, is what we mentioned at the beginning. We have obstacles. We have struggles. We have things that we go through that we need help. We need some type of power to overcome. And so we might say that we need hope. And I will agree 100% with that. But hope doesn't just live in the bad times. Hope is not just something that we pull out when a tragedy or struggle comes into our life, because that we're not living in hope at that point. We're taking hope and we're saying, okay, I need hope now, and then we're going to put hope back in the box, bring it out and put it back in the box. And Peter says, this is a living hope that we're born again into. This is something, when you're born into something, it's part of your life. It's this new thing. You're dying to something else, and you're coming alive to this hope. And so I want to look at hope just from a purely generic perspective of, we all live with hope every day. You might not think you do. You don't actually think in your mind that you live with hope, but you live with hope every day when you look at the things that you focus on. So I would say that my generation, we tend to have, and this is blanket generalization here, we tend to have short-term focus. We have short-term desires, instant gratification. The internet is our beast that gives us what we want when we want it. What is a library? You have to go find a what? A book? That's not what we do. So we have this life that's built on these short-term focuses, but those are still things that we desire. They're things that we want, and they're things that we expect. And so we then go do something for that particular object. I think this is easier to talk to an older generation, where retirement and planning and long-term goals in your career are things that you actually live in, and then you do something. I want to be at a certain place when I'm 65, and so I set up an account, and I put money into it, and that grows. I have a desire to be somewhere at a certain point. I expect to get there by doing these actions. You live in hope of that. You don't actually know if that's going to happen, but you're doing things expecting that it's going to happen. And so in thinking of this and thinking about, well, I don't just want to preach a lesson to the 65 and older crowd, which I think hope normally kind of goes that direction. It goes to people who are in massive trouble or are looking towards the end, and this is the hope that they see, the end of their goal. Looking at where hope falls in everyday stage of life. And looking at, I've just broke these out into things, and you might not actually fit into what I say at 10, 15, 20, 30, 50, or 80 that you're actually dealing with in your life. But the point of this is to see that hope is needed regardless of how old you are. So at 10 years old, this might be 5 years old, this might be 15, depends on where you fall. The realization of life starts to happen. The fact that good things and bad things happen, that there's a reality that exists outside my toy box. And with that, things disappoint. You also expect things, and you know that you can do things to get that. So if you tell a child that they're going to Disneyland, they're going to act a certain way. They live in hope of that trip that you've given them. Like at 15, and this is at 10, I call this like the realization phase. I realize hope. I realize that there are things in the future that I want and that I can expect. At 15, right, you're looking at, you've got this conflict in your life of, who am I? What am I doing? You've got peers, bullies, and maybe even a lack of self-confidence. This is that phase in which you yourself, you're just tested. You've got all of these things pressing up against you, And so you've got to get through that somehow. So this is, for me, the testing phase of hope. 20, we've got transitional decisions, schools, careers, marriage. This is the own it stage of hope. I've got to take and I've got to make a commitment to that hope. I've got to say, this is the goal, and I got some level of expectation, and so I'm going to live a certain way because of that. 30 is the persistent phase. I've set my goal, I've committed to it, and I'm working through it. And I've got to keep my eye on that prize and not deviate off somewhere. Now, 50, this is when talking with David about this, this is getting his insight. So I feel like I can say this. This is the over the hill, the mortality state. You recognize that the end is a whole lot closer than the beginning now. And so hopefully, right, here we go. We use this word without even thinking about it. Hopefully, there's something else because my days are ticking down. And then 80 plus. You're actually seeing the end, and so this is the stage in which you finish strong within hope. So the last thing with actually why I need hope is this slide right here. What's on this hope? What's on this slide? No hope. Right? So if you really want to see why you need something, just remove it from the equation. Remove it from the situation and see, why do I need hope? Well, what is it to be hopeless? You have no desire. You have no expectation. You don't have a purpose, right? This is, you see depression, dark outlooks of life. Your drive to move forward is gone. What are you living for? And this is where we see when people begin to be crushed. You lose the trust, you lose the faith, the hope itself dies, and it's dark. But this comes with a tragedy. And I think actually the more dangerous one, the one that I find for myself to be a lot more challenging, a lot more struggling, is what I'm going to call dead-end hope. Or living without hope. And when you live without hope, you tell yourself, I don't need hope. I don't have to think about hope. This isn't living hope. What do I need that for? Because I'm comfortable. I've got a good job. I make enough money to pay the bills. I've got a house. I've got a relatively happy child most of the time. I've got a great church family. What do I need hope for? Right? And this is the situation that I find is more challenging to deal with and more challenging to make applicable to myself. And I don't think Satan's a dummy. He realized that when you persecute Christianity, when you put them into struggles, that they've got to do something. And this is when they can look at that hope and make the hope real. But you take that away, take the struggles away and make them feel comfortable here. Why do they need hope? Why do they need to look forward to something when everything here is so good? And so I'll throw out there that if you destroy hope, remove the need for hope, that you can destroy the Christian. That you can take the Christian out of the equation because you just make them comfortable here. They don't need to live in hope. You don't need to overcome struggles. You don't need God. You don't need faith. You have no desire, no want, and no expectation in any of these things. So, why do I need hope? I need hope because the things here, they go away. If I put my hope here, those things go away. We take 1 Peter 1, 3 to 5. He uses the terms imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. Hope here, things that we put our hope in here, our jobs, the money that we have, our relationships, all of these things, they fade. To me, they're kind of like patio furniture. You put a lot of effort, a lot of money into getting it, making it right, and putting it there. It sits out in the sun, and then you're disappointed with it. And isn't that what the things here in life are? You get it, and then you're not satisfied with it. Or, well, I could do just a little bit better. And so I put my hope in this scale that constantly moves up, right? We might say climbing the ladder. Well, what's at the top of your ladder? If you're looking at that from a worldly standpoint, the top of your ladder is death, which is super depressing. You walk up this ladder to get more things, to have, just to finally give it all back, for it to fall apart, for it to moth and rust and be destroyed. And so at this point, that's why I need hope, because I don't want to live a shallow life like that. I don't want to live in a life in which I'm living for nothing. I'm living for something that's going to turn back into dust. So, how do I overcome with hope, or what power do I have in my hope? I think we look at what hope gives us, and we see what hope gives us, we can see how we can use the power of hope. So hope gives us confidence. We see that our confidence is raised when we have hope. And when we're using the word hope here, it's probably a bad part on my side with the slides. It should have been a little bit more explicit. We're talking about a living hope in God now. From here, the rest of the lesson. When I have a living hope in God, what do I have? What power does it give me to deal with the struggles in my life? So a living hope in God has confidence. And this is foundational to our definition of hope. Hope is expectation. Right? That's one of our components. What's our expectation as Christians? That's another way to put that. It's faith. It's trust. Trust in God. Our trust in God delivers the level of expectation we have in what He's going to give us. And if you look at who God is, what He's done for us, the power that He has, the authority that He has, that confidence meter just keeps going up, 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 up. To the point where you get to Romans 8 again, in which Paul writes in verse 35, "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or sword or danger? As it is written, for your sake we are being killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life nor angels nor rulers, things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ." That's the confidence that I have in what I'm going to get when I have a living hope. Living hope gives us a focus. It gives us a goal. Why do I need it? Because we live with goals. We live with things within our focus. And so this is God's design, God's beautiful design of a human element inside of all of this, which we live with a focus. And so when we live with the focus of being something on this world, we live with something with a finite end. We live with a focus of someone can take this away from me. Something might cause us to be destroyed. And so there's only so much expectation and outcome of the power of earthly hope. But when we have the focus of something that is, in verse 5, guarded by God's power, it's imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, that's kept in heaven for us, we have a focus that's not moving, a focus that's not changing. And so when things press in around us, we don't have the temptation to change focus to something else, right? That change in focus is the change in action in our life. And finally, hope gives us perspective. I like the cartoon, so I threw it up there. The guy on the shore, boat. Guy on the land, land, right? Depending on where you're standing from, the same situation might look a little different. The same situations, the same obstacles happen to all of us in life. But it's how we respond to those that show the living nature of our hope or not. So looking at this practically speaking, when you have a job that is everything in your life, when your focus are the things that you have, the paycheck, your ability to provide, which I know for us guys mostly, that's a huge hit to your ego if you can't provide. But when that job is it, when that ego is it, and that goes away, right? Someone's taken away your desire or your expectation, your job goes away, you have no expectation of being able to fulfill that desire of the standard of living. But for us as a Christian, we realize that from our perspective, this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to go through a trial, to come out with more trust in God. Because when you can't rely on yourself, you have to trust in God. You have to trust in the plans that He's given. So what if you, and this is obviously a lot easier for me to say up here than it is to actually experience. So don't take my flippancy if it comes off like that as demeaning to the problem. But so what if your job goes away and your house goes and you lose everything that you have? What has not been taken away from you? Your hope. Your hope hasn't been taken because no one can separate you from what God has promised. He alone holds that inheritance for you and that thing. So you can continue to move on regardless of what happens in your physical circumstances. So in the time that we have left, I actually want to look at some practical ways that we live with the power of hope. That I actually take the hope and stuff it down inside me and I live it out. And it comes out of me. Because this is, again, it's not something that I feel like you just pull hope out of the toolbox when I need it in a tragedy. Hope is like the gas that runs the engine. It's the thing that's inside of us that propels us forward. And so I want to start with what I'm going to call the concept of macro hope. This is the big hope, the hope that you need for those big struggles and tragedies in life. And these come out to me in three categories. illness, death, and tragedy. So looking at health, what's the hope killer in health? It's that right there, right? It's the killer, right? When you take away your life and you have an earthly hope, you take away the expectation to get any of those desires. When I'm 60, I would like X and Y to happen. But if I get a terminal illness at 30, I now have no hope for that desire. It's gone. And so we see that the focus is purely dependent on our ability to live. And so illness and death becomes detrimental to our worldly hope. But as Christians, we have the attitude of Paul, right? To live is Christ and to die is gain. Because at the end of our physical life is actually the realization of our hope. Our hope does end. I don't want to lie and say that our hope persists forever, because that would be a depressing hope as well, a hope in which you never actually get to recognize what the outcome is. But as Christians, the realization of our hope starts at death. When we die, we then get to participate in this inheritance forever. And at that point, the outcome of the hope is never going to disappoint. So, tragedy, and I actually put tragedy under worry and doubt here in my notes, because tragedy itself, these times when things press in against you and you are just completely overwhelmed by the pressures of work and life and all of these different outside forces, and those are what creates the tragedies for us. But again, this comes back, you're going to see, this comes back to the fact that nothing takes us away from the exaltation that God is going to give us. So he actually says in 1 Peter 5, 6 to 7, Peter writes for these people. He says, "Humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, so at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you." So your worries, you give them to God. Again, abstract. What do I do with that? Give it to God. Well, that means look at God and look at the things that you, the struggles, the things that are pressing into your life, and say, "God, I don't need these. Here, take them and let me focus on the things that you actually have for me." And we come back to this focus that hope gives us that allows us to get past the tragedy. It doesn't mean the tragedy is going to get better. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden everything becomes roses, but it means that you can look at something in which you will persist through confidently. Your perspective is so much different than those who live in the world without no hope. 1 Thessalonians 4:13 is actually something that talks about death, and he says, we are not like those who have no hope, because when your life ends at death, you have no hope. Your hope is in. Realization of life is done. So now, the micro level of hope. So we deal with the big things, and those happen sometimes in our lives. And for some people, they happen more often than others. But what can I do with this on a daily basis? Well, I'm glad you asked. I got a couple of chuckles. So hope gives us the ability to overcome bad attitudes. Where do bad attitudes come from? Like the Sour Patch Kids, right? Where do these attitudes come from? They come because we get upset. Things don't go our way. We look at things, and it's people through words or actions are taking away our expectations and our desires. That expectation can be anything. The desire can be anything. But when they say something against it, it might be against your ego, it might be against your self-esteem, it might be makes you feel bad, we get upset, we grumble, we complain, and we don't do what we should because we're focused on losing that thing. But this was brought up in class, actually, hope rises us above that. You say what you want about me. Take away what you want. I don't need to have a bad attitude. This list here is actually what came out of me thinking from the past couple weeks when I start getting frustrated, when I start getting angry. If I want to say something bad, stop and think about, wait, what do I hope in? What do I focus in? What do I have confidence that I'm going to get? And does this really matter? When we look at hope, we look at the desire and the expectation, we see the things in life that matter. There are lots of things in life that we hope for, but there's only one thing that we live our lives filled with the hope for, and that's what God's given us. That's the thing we live for. If I live for the approval of people that I work with, if I live for the approval of you all here, I'm going to do things. My attitude is going to change, because when you don't approve of me, you've now taken away my desire. You've taken away the outcome. So materialism, right? We kind of already talked about this. We hope in the stuff. And I think a lot more of us deal with this than we might want to admit. Because when things start going south and they affect my ability to pay for Netflix or my ability to put gas in my car or my ability to put food on the table, my attitude goes south. And I start doing things I shouldn't do. I start putting off things in order that I can go do something else to make that standard of living come back. So if you think about it this way, I can work 65 years and put up a retirement for a slick new car, because I will get a slick new car at some point in life. And what is it going to do? It's going to disappoint me all the time. Why? Because I got to take it in for maintenance. It's going to break. It might crash. It's going to get rained on. I'm going to park it in the parking lot uncovered, and who knows what's going to happen to it, right? I work all my life for this stuff. Or I can live my life for something everlasting, evergreen. That doesn't mean I can't have a car. That doesn't mean that I can't want things and I can't buy things with my money. But do I live my life for those items? Does the hope that's within me have the power to overcome that if it's taken away? If that car is taken away, does my life stop if someone breaks into my house while I'm up here preaching? Does my life stop? It doesn't. It keeps going. Because I'm working forward and focusing on something else. The final one is relationships. We all hope in good relationships. We want to have good relationships with people. We don't want to be enemies with people. I don't think that we want to fight with people, but we do. And we do because people constantly disappoint us. I put my hope in someone and they disappoint me because of how they act, something that they do contrary to my expectation of what I desire them to be living like. And so then I start losing my hope. But flip this around. We look at the example that Peter sets with servants and masters and our place in regards to the government as well as husbands and wives. And we see that the expectation for us is not to be in this relationship status. Our expectation is to show them the hope that we have within us. And that's where we find confidence, and that's where we see joy within our lives. When we see someone who, through ignorance, through lack of focus, through lack of perspective, act dumb, they just do mean things, our hope lets us see that they need something. I have a focus that this person needs, and so then I give them that hope because it's living in me, right? That's how the slave is able to go and still do the right thing regardless of the fact that he's being beaten. So as an employee, this is by no means representative of my actual workplace now. I will put that disclaimer. I worked at Blue Shield. We'll put it there. And this, you know, this happens. If I do the right thing and my employer gets me in trouble, if I do the right thing and someone throws me under the bus, I've still done the right thing. I've lived with the focus and the perspective that I have. And so what if they fire me? So what if it goes away? I still have the hope. I still have a desire and an expectation that can't be stripped away. So simply put, hope gives me the power to live. Hope is the power that I live by as a Christian. How this looks in your everyday life is it means that you start your day with what do I desire and how much do I expect that thing? This is not something that I have done prior to preparing for this sermon. I don't get up in the morning and look at my hope and then go live with that hope. It's more of the reaction state. It's the, oh, something bad happened. I need to find something that's going to get me through the situation. That's not what Peter talks about here, this living hope. This is the hope that these people start their day and they live by. And regardless of whatever circumstance, whatever obstacle they might find, they're able to persevere and continue through. So do you have powerful hope? For those of you that are Christians, right, you do have powerful hope. Now go use it. Take and put the hope on, right? Put your super cape on and go out there and live like you have an expectation and a desire that cannot be taken away and that supersedes everything in this life. And if you aren't a Christian, you don't have this hope. You can't say that no one can take away something from you. Because as Christians, You don't have this inheritance that's imperishable, that's undefiled and unfading, but you can have it. There is a hope for you. And that hope comes through repairing the relationship with God, because He is the only one that can actually give you the hope. Peter, in chapter 3:21, he says, "Now baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you." Speaking about Noah being saved in the ark. Baptism is where we meet Christ in His death. And that is where we find the power of our hope. It says in 1:18-21 that we're ransomed from our sin, from our futile ways, to a faith and hope in Christ. So the challenge then is, what will you do with your hope if you are a Christian? And if you are not a Christian, where can you find your hope? Let's all stand and sing.